The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello there, my name's Neil David, and I'm the host of Eurograps Express, the podcast exclusively dedicated to the wrestling of Europe. If it's wrestling, and it happens in Europe, and it's good, we talk about it. Whether it's RevPro, Progress, WXW, Passion Pro, Pro Wrestling Chaos, Pro Wrestling North, we don't care, we talk about them all. If it's good and it's exciting, I want to share it with you. We're on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Check us out on the feed. Check us out on Twitter at EurograpsEXP. And join us for chat about European wrestling and a little bit of chat about cheese. Hopefully see you there.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I am your host, Tyler Fornes, and with me, as always, my co-host, Fred Moreland, and we are unfortunate to be doing a podcast in a world post-Jay Briscoe, who unfortunately passed away in a tragic car accident on Tuesday evening. Fred, I know you have the details, and it's honestly tragic.
Yeah, it's just a terrible situation. According to the press release from the Delaware State Police, in case you haven't seen that, about 5 p.m. on Tuesday, there was it was on this two-lane road, and there was a Chevy Silverado 1500 headed west, and the Chevy Silverado 2500 headed east. East was Jay Briscoe and, you know, his birth name, Jamin Pugh's vehicle, and the other truck crossed the center line for some reason, and it was a head-on collision. Reportedly, Briscoe was not wearing his seatbelt. Both of the drivers were pronounced dead at the scene. Jay had his two daughters with him, a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old, who were wearing their seatbelts, thank God, and they were taken to the hospital in critical condition. I haven't seen an update of any sort on how they're doing today. Hopefully better. If I recall correctly, I don't have it in front of me. I think there was a screen cap purported, I should say, to be from their mother, Jay's wife, saying that one of her daughters would hopefully be able to walk again. So, tremendously tragic news all around. You know, we can't help but feel, you know, not just for Jay and his family, but also the family of the other driver. It's unclear what circumstances actually caused the wreck, caused her crossing the double, or at least the center line. I'm not sure if it was a double yellow or a passing situation or what, but yeah, entirely too young, just 38 years old. He's going to turn 39 next Wednesday, as a matter of fact.
And Mark's birthday was this past Wednesday.
Yeah, it was yesterday. We're recording this on the 19th. So just a tremendously terrible situation. The outpouring of love that was on Twitter, I think, says a lot about what Jay Briscoe was as a person. I never met him. I don't know him. I'm a nobody. But, you know, I mean, there were so many really kind things said about him by practically everyone that worked with him. Ones that stick out to me, Kevin Owens had some particularly lovely things to say. I will read that real quick. He tweeted this yesterday on the 18th, yesterday afternoon. I spent hours reading what people had to say about Jamin last night. I watched some of our matches together. I went back and read our last text to each other. I am so heartbroken for his family, every single one of them that I met over the years. And I met a lot of them because they all stuck together like glue, all special human beings that would give you the shirt off their back in a heartbeat if you needed it. That's who Jamin was, too. There are a few people in this industry that I consider pillars of my own career, people I truly feel I would not be where I am today had I not encountered them. Jay and Mark Briscoe are two of those pillars. In 2007, they had the opportunity to make or break two Canadian guys. They were trying to put themselves on the map on the U.S. indie scene. I remember walking up to Jay that afternoon before a match and asking what he wanted to do. Never met him before. First interaction we ever had. He heard my question, looked at me, and with a huge smile across his face said, "Well, shit, man, let's go out there and fucking kill it." So we did. We did that night, and we did many times after that. Each match I had with him stands out in my memory among the thousands of matches I've had in my career, because working with the Briscoes was special every single time. Having the honor of being in the ring with Jay and his entire family as they celebrated after he beat me for the ROH title is my favorite moment of my independent career, bar none. It was special for all of them, for the crowd there that night, for everyone in the locker room, and for me because Jay was special. I didn't get to see Jamin much after I went to WWE in 2014. In fact, I think we only saw each other once. It was like no time had passed at all. He came to see a WWE show, and of course he had his own family with him. He was so excited and proud to tell me about everything his kids and his wife were up to and how great they were doing. He loved his family with everything he had. It was amazing to see them all. We didn't keep in touch very often, but every time we did, it absolutely made my day. Getting a text message from him was always like a giant ray of sunshine. I'm so thankful I got to have him in my life. I'm so thankful for the laughs and the memories. Just so thankful to have known him. I'm a better person for having had the chance to. My heart goes out to Ashley and the kids, to Mark and his parents, and to everyone else that knew and loved him. And that's a lot of fucking people, because Jay was special.
That's just, it's heartbreaking, man, to hear people speak so kindly about somebody that just is gone way too soon. And one that stood out to me because, and we're going to transition into talking about some of the elements of Jay Briscoe. And as you can hear my doorbell ring, because there's a package, one of the things that why Jay Briscoe was never on mainstream television was because he had a couple homophobic tweets talking about gay marriage. And he spoke about it and said, "Hey, I was wrong. I thought I was speaking for God." And he seemed to do everything that he could to become a better person. And it was unfortunate that he was never really given a chance to be mainstream, because he would have been considered one of the greats, and likely the Briscoes would have been first ballot Hall of Famers. And it's really, really unfortunate.
Yeah. So what happened exactly was in 2011 and more notably 2013, Jay had some homophobic remarks on Twitter that he sent out. And those are documented currently on Wikipedia, on his Wikipedia page under the controversy section right now. There's a couple slurs in there I don't really want to read. But, you know, he apologized both on the ROH website and at a house show, and said that he was trying to reflect the redneck character he plays on TV, which I don't know. That's really a great excuse, to be honest. But I think the more important thing he did, as Tyler comes back, I'm just going over the, you know, what happened with Jay in the tweets. It does appear that Jay really did actually try to improve and change as a person. Mm-hmm. I saw a clip of Ian Riccoboni on, I believe it was a post news show, with Whiting, where Ian talked about how, you know, he thinks from his experience with Jay, because he actually traveled together quite a bit, that Jay had done self-assessment and tried to improve. And, you know, I've seen tweets from so many people, including people that are out as LGBTQ+, about how Jay was a good person and tried to make them feel accepted in wrestling. And I think, you know, that says a lot about him as a person. I think the really important thing to consider here is that Jay did try to improve as a person, and by the accounts I've seen, looks to have accomplished it. And, you know, kind of selfishly, just because I love him as a wrestler, I wish that was given more weight, you know, that was considered more rather than the initial tweets. I feel like he paid penance for it, and most importantly, he tried to improve as a person, and it sounded like he achieved that. And that's, I personally think, you know, being able to improve as a person is probably the best thing you can do as a person. Given that it seems like he accomplished that, it's kind of a shame that he kept having to pay for those, you know, for the absolute fuck ups he had, which they were. I mean, I'm not going to mince words about that. There's no excuses for those, but, you know, I think he did try to make amends.
Yeah, and I think this tweet from Effie really exemplifies him making amends and being a good person, as Odie hits my coffee table because he's so excited that my bug guy is here taking care of the house. And the tweet reads, "Jay showed me respect and love when everyone told me he wouldn't. If you knew Jay, you knew he would uplift everyone in that locker room, regardless of whatever world they came to wrestling from. The best. Rest easy, brother." And when we talk about Jay Briscoe and some of those unfortunate happenings from 2013 and how he grew as a human being and as a person, like, it's, you just felt like there was a redemption arc coming, and he was gonna, like, it's just speaking from a wrestling perspective, because obviously everything you heard was that he was a tremendous family man, a great father, and he loved his family. But it's just from a wrestling perspective, we'll never be able to see him potentially have that true breakout that he's deserved for so long. It just, as an in-ring performer, he is arguably a top five promo of all time. There's probably like 10 or 15 individuals you could put in that top five kind of range, because there's so many tremendous promos in the pantheon of professional wrestling. But Jay Briscoe, you could feel everything that he said. And we talked about this on our Match of the Year show. If you just want a clip of us talking about how great the Briscoes were, there is a clip on the Voice of Wrestling YouTube channel. Go check it out. It's about 7 minutes of just us raving about Briscoes and FTR. Briscoe, Jay made you feel. He made you feel everything was real. He made you feel every emotion, every ounce of like pain that he was going through in the ring. Like, you felt it with him, and the world of professional wrestling just going to hurt for a while. And when you transition to Dynamite, you could see it. The Bucks looked lifeless, man. They looked just absolutely destroyed. And I don't blame them. Their matches with the Briscoes are legendary, and them having to go out there and deliver against Top Flight, which they did, and they had that little homage spot of the Doomsday Device. I thought it would have been cool for them to do a Jay Driller with a that combine it with the Meltzer Driver, which I think, who knows, maybe they'll do that. But you could just tell that Jay meant something to a lot of people in that business, and just how quickly they were able to just put those little things together to kind of honor him, I think was special. And it's really unfortunate that we're never going to get to see him in a wrestling ring. And it's even more unfortunate that a family lost a son, a husband, a brother, and a father, because that's the real loss here. Those little girls are not going to have their dad, and it breaks my heart.
Yeah, it's beyond sad. It's just utterly tragic and just a terrible situation. And I suppose that I'll segue here. Well, do you have any specific Jay Briscoe memories you want to share? Because my personal experience with him was pretty limited. I, you know, the biggest part of it is probably the FTR stuff. I did not really have the cash to buy Ring of Honor DVDs for, you know, the first decade of the promotion. Then after that, I was too busy doing real life stuff for a while before I became a super wrestling nerd.
The only period I ever was really invested in Ring of Honor was when Jay Briscoe was world champion in that 2013 era. And like, I didn't get him at first because I, at that point, if you don't know my wrestling story from, like, I was a huge WWE guy in like the Ruthless Aggression era, and that was kind of my intro to wrestling. My first two matches were Brock Lesnar, Kurt Angle, Iron Man, and John Cena, Eddie Guerrero parking lot brawl. Like, that was my intro to wrestling because my mom hates it. And I lapsed in about 2008. And then I was living in an apartment in Fargo, North Dakota, and I found Ring of Honor. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. And watched some Jay Briscoe, and I didn't get him at first, but then it doesn't take long. And his matches were excellent. His promos were awesome. The fight on the farm with him and Mark, if you've never seen that, is awesome. It's the weirdest combination of cinematic wrestling and something you'd see on Jackass while also being professional wrestling. Like,
I just watched it last night, as a matter of fact.
It's excellent. I wish I would have put that in my match of the year just as like number 10. Kind of like that vanity spot, just because it was a lot of fun and it fits so well with who the Briscoes were. And I really started to get into the Briscoes as a tag team over the past few years, and their promos leading up to each of those three matches with FTR, where Jay is literally just standing in front of a cell phone camera, yelling at it, talking shit, and Mark just being the perfect compliment to him, just making little quips and jokes while still being in like a serious tone. Like, it was beyond special. And we're going to talk about how the last match, I believe, in the life of Jay Briscoe was the dog collar match. I don't know if they have done any indies since.
I think they did
like House of Glory.
They did one after the House of Glory match, I do believe.
The second to last match, then, in theory, I know you're looking it up on Cage Match, Fred, of Jay Briscoe.
You can probably hear me tippy tapping. Sorry.
It was your favorite match of all time. And
one of very, very high up there. Yeah, they did one more match with Jay Lyon and Midas Black in a best 2 out of 3 falls match.
And I bet that was tremendous. We could go on and on about how tragic this whole situation is, but I think we should really start transitioning to Dynamite and the news. And I think that the biggest thing, and I think you mentioned it while I was grabbing the door, was the fact that, you know, TNT and TBS, Warner Brothers Discovery, really didn't let them feature Jay Briscoe in any kind of tribute other than a 5-second shot at the very beginning of the show and a couple casual mentions, nothing. They really didn't let him do anything. And
that's the assumption. I don't think there's any concrete reporting on that out. And I don't think we ever would.
Hold on. I think Meltzer did say that on Wrestling Observer Live, but I don't know how concrete you can call that because I did not hear the actual clip.
Yeah, I have not had a chance to listen to that show yet. And I think that, you know, it's very possible, just because it's taken out of context, it's very possible, and also because of how Dave speaks, you know, some you have to get a degree in Daveology sometimes to suss some things out. But, you know, it's very possible that he's saying that he believes they did it rather, or they mandated it rather than reporting it. Dave's a little ineloquent at that sometimes. I did actually try to do a journalism last night. I sent an email to AW's media relations and try to ask them if, you know, this was due to a mandate from Turner Media, Warner Brothers, I should say, Discovery, but they didn't respond, which frankly I was expecting. But yeah, it certainly seems that way. I don't know how you could really not draw that conclusion. I mean, the other conclusion is that, like, Tony Khan's a jerk that hates Jay Briscoe or something, which defies all, you know, any kind of examination of facts regarding, like, not just, you know, what he's tweeted and how he's acted regarding the Briscoes since signing them, but also how he behaved regarding Brody Lee's death. I don't think that's a reasonable read at all. You have to kind of be out to lunch to really believe that. So the only reasonable thing I could think is that Warner Brother, Discovery, whichever executive there it was that came up with this, upheld it, you know, even after the man's tragic death, which is really kind of fucked up, to be blunt. Mm-hmm. And especially when you consider that immediately after the show, they transition to Power Slap, which has, you know, Dana White's raggedy ass running all over the place after he decided to be cool to just slap his wife around in public on New Year's Eve. And there would probably be some people that like to, you know, play the, well, she slapped him first card, like that just opens up a, you know, your combat menu automatically, like this is some RPG shit or something. I don't know. I just don't have any time for this bullshit. This is, you know, I could probably rant about Power Slap just as a general concept for hours and how it's terrible and going to kill someone. But I mean, the fact that Jay Briscoe was treated that way, but Dana White was treated this way is really, I think, a moral failing of Warner Brothers Discovery. It's a real tragic thing in its own way that they don't get to pay tribute to this fantastic performer because, you know, because of what he did. And but they don't give him any credit for making up for it. But Dana White, you know, gets to trot around on national TV as the centerpiece of a TV show because he said, well, if I get suspended, that's just going to hurt. You know, that's going to keep me from promoting matches and then people will lose money. And everyone in the major MMA media just going like, oh, that makes sense to me. I guess we'll go with that.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of get what Dana White said, and I'm not defending him, but he also said that I like me taking a 30-day leave versus me having to live the rest of my life with everybody thinking of me as like a woman beater. If that's inherently worse than just taking 30 days off and going right back to work, that doesn't do anybody any good. I kind of get it, but in all honesty, I know he can't really go away because he's a part owner, but he should probably just go away. And let's get a new promoter in there. It's the whole thing is scummy, and it's really unfortunate that like honoring a tremendous professional wrestler that made one mistake and did everything he could.
Well, it was multiple times, but yeah, I mean,
okay.
Yeah, there was a couple a couple tweets a couple years earlier that were pretty shitty too, that I actually wasn't aware of until I just read them on Wikipedia. But yeah, I mean, again, it seems like he really did try to improve as a person, and you know, like not giving him credit for that is upsetting, you know. But
yeah, it 100% is. You could just tell that there was something off by the way Tony Khan was tweeting last night during the whole thing, feeling like he should have been doing more to honor the passing of Jay Briscoe like he did for Brody Lee. Mm-hmm. And the continuous talking about like, hey, we're going to be honoring him. It's going to be available for free on YouTube and Honor Club, and doing all those things is really unfortunate.
There's a lot of between the lines reading you can do on the, with these tweets he sent out last night. He actually, I think he removed several of them, to be honest. I don't know if I've ever seen him delete a tweet before, to be frank. I just didn't go back far enough. Yeah, they are, you know, they talked after the show, they taped a tribute to him, which is going to go up on as a free show on Honor Club and also on YouTube. But yeah, you know, just the way Tony Khan tweeted about it, it very much reads like he knows that he's catching a bit of heat for it. And he's trying to say without saying that it wasn't his call is how I'm reading it.
Yeah, so, it's really unfortunate. But all I can say is this: it's tragic. I hope that everybody that knew him will be able to find some peace, and will be able to eventually move on and be able to live a happy life, because that's. It's not about us who love the professional wrestler. It's about those who love the man.
Yeah, and that's far more important. And just hoping for the best for his daughters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously if there's like any kind of fundraiser for them.
We will definitely share that when it pertains. And then if you have any favorite matches involving Jay Briscoe, please share them. Join the Voice Wrestling Discord and go to our channel, which is at one of the top grouped with all the other great podcasts on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. Please share them with us so we can enjoy some more Jay Briscoe. And
my favorite thing, actually, that I saw over the past couple of days, and what I actually sat down and I put together a list on my Patreon as a free post of like 10 Briscoe promos and 100 matches that he had that are available somewhere online for free without getting into like torrents or any shit like that. There's a video from the pandemic, like I want to say April 2020 or something along those lines, where he is practicing with his 10-ish-year-old daughter, her cheerleading routine, and it's just...
That was phenomenal.
Yeah, that just made me tear up.
Just a great dad.
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah, he's having fun with her. He's got the same hair ribbon in that she does. It's tremendously touching, and... yeah, just very. I don't. You know, I know I've said it's sad 1,000 times. That's not enough times, though. So
no, it's not. And let's move on and let's start talking about this Dynamite. And as I mentioned earlier, it was they did have the graphic of Jay Briscoe and in parentheses Jamie Pugh, his real name that he had passed away. And I thought it was noteworthy that during the intro, during the pyrotechnics, Excalibur's like, it's Wednesday. You know what that means? Well, he waited until the pyro was done, almost as another tiny little homage to Briscoe. Kind of like a lot of times you'll do like the 10 count. I know that's a very common thing in pyro. And like, especially like I remember when Inoki passed away. That got really emotional, especially with guys like Okada and Hiroshi Tanahashi. Like, and you do the 10 count, and I think they did the same thing for Brody Lee. I would expect that when we see the Jay Briscoe tribute shows with Ring of Honor, you're going to see a lot of the same thing. But we've spent a lot of time talking about how kind of unfortunate this whole thing was, and we're gonna move on to talk about Dynamite. Dynamite started off with an All-Atlantic Championship match, Freshly Squeezed Orange Cassidy with Danhausen versus Jay Lethal. And it was announced earlier in the day that if Satnam Singh, Jeff Jarrett, or Sanjay Dutt interfere in the match, Dutt would be fired. And they sneak up and they try to get front row seats, but Danhausen's like, no, those are my tickets. These are my seats. And then in comes the best friends, Trent Beretta and Chuck Taylor. And they had a match, and overall it was pretty good. Really solid television match with some chicanery. And at the end, they come in. Satnam Singh's about to chokeslam the best friends. Sanjay's still worried he's going to get fired. Jeff Jarrett brings the guitar, and he's about to swing it. Sanjay stops him. Overall, it was a little gimmick heavy after the match. But look, it's Jay Lethal and Orange Cassidy. They had a solid opening match. I gave it 3.5.
Yeah, I thought this was pretty fun, but I also felt like the comedy really distracted from the match to the point that the match was secondary. So I didn't like love this, but it was enjoyable in its own way. It was fun, and probably what they needed to start the show off, just to kind of give some levity after probably a lot of heavy thoughts, heading into it. I went 2.25 on it, which probably sounds grumpy, I don't know, but I just thought that they really leaned on the outside stuff a lot, and the match itself wasn't too terribly much, but it was well worked what we did see, and it was fun enough. So
yeah, that's about all I have to say about it too. This is kind of going off the rails a little bit just because of how somber of an episode this was. And it got even worse when AEW World Trios Champions, 2/3 of them, Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson took on Top Flight, Dante and Darius Martin. And this match was fun as hell. A lot of flippy-doos, a lot of really, really impressive things. The spot where Dante does that little jump up springboard off the top rope, and then he gets the double super kick on the floor. You get the doomsday device from the Young Bucks honoring the Briscoes. But at the end, Darius Martin catches, I believe it was Matt Jackson, with the roll up, 1, 2, 3. And I would presume, which we were kind of hoping would be the case, that Top Flight would end up getting a trios championship opportunity against the Elite. Looks like that's happening. So overall, it was a very successful segment. And you know, Fred, these guys have a lot better match in them. A lot.
Yeah, this was a good teaser. This was a good start. I enjoyed this. I went 4 stars on it. It was very fun, very impressive stuff in there. Like once at the very beginning when Dante just like did some ridiculous flip out of an arm ring, or it was like, well, there's going to be some shit tonight. It was a lot of fun. Just enjoyed it a lot. And it's pretty obviously going to be setting up a trios match between Top Flight and AR Fox and the Elite, which should be a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely should be a ton of fun. After that, we were supposed to hear from the Acclaimed, and then you had the Guns come out. Well, the Acclaimed got Austin's mic to shut off, and then you have the rap. And this, I did not want to see this. Billy Gunn, I'm sick and tired of this. Next week, we're going to sit down and hash this all out, so I have two words for you. Family therapy. Look, there's a chance that this segment could be really good, but I don't care. I don't want to see it. I really don't.
I feel like we did this a year ago.
It wasn't even a year ago. This is like 3 months ago that we were dealing with the Guns and the Acclaimed doing the flippy doos. Like, this was last summer.
Yeah. I believe that it'll be a good segment just because the Acclaimed have a lot of skill in that kind of segment and creativity. And I think the Guns are quietly good at talking. I think I've just kind of started to figure out that they're good promos. So I think that this could be entertaining, but I don't know. It feels like we went really fast back to the Gun Club, huh? In the world title picture.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that we talked on last week's show that FTR was given a long leave of absence from the ring by Tony Khan, which, let's be honest, after the year they had, they deserve a little R&R to be able to relax and heal their bodies back up. And that's arguably a good thing. This is going to be an interesting one where we had Renee Paquette interviewing Hangman Page backstage. Basically, this is a continuation of the storyline that's been going on that started really organically with John Moxley, now legit knocking out Hangman Page in the world title match on October 18th. And now we're doing the angle where John Moxley now has the concussion. And somebody mentioned this to me, a good friend of mine, DJ Myers, and I want your opinion on this. Is this the beginning of a love triangle angle? Because I didn't get it at first. And when he mentioned it, I kind of see where he's going with it, which is why I wanted to mention it to you, Fred. If he was under the assumption that it felt like these two Renee was a little extra friendly with Paige, and there was a little like chemistry, a little back and forth. It felt a little awkward. I didn't get that, but I didn't want to rule it out. What did you think?
I didn't get anything of that sort, to be honest. I didn't think it was setting up for anything like that. I think it was, to me, it was just Paige, being kind of socially awkward, as he often is in his promos, where he tried, he was acting thoughtfully and decided not to say something he was going to. I honestly wonder if we're actually heading towards an eventual tag team between Mox and Paige. That's the vibe I got more than any kind of love triangle centering around Renee, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, and I'm really intrigued to see kind of how this goes, but we'll find out as things kind of continue to progress forward, because this is going to end in some kind of match, and I wouldn't be shocked if it's some kind of death match, because let's be honest, that is a specialty of John Moxley. Next up, Jericho Appreciation Society's Jake Hager And he comes out with Chris Jericho in 2.0 versus Absolute Ricky Starks. Jericho goes to commentary, and Menard and Parker are ringside. Look, for a Jake Hager match, this was good. I gave it 3.5. There were some fun spots, some fun moments. I really, really wish Ricky Starks would have stolen the hat and run off with it, because I thought that would have been really funny, and I think Starks could pull off the bucket hat. But we didn't get that, and we got a 1-2-3, and then we had the Jericho Appreciation Society try to attack Starks. Starks bails, and bada bing, bada boom, we have a kind of continuation of the story. Later on in the show, we had an interview with Chris Jericho and both Sammy Guevara and Daniel Garcia, and Jericho challenged both Action Andretti and Ricky Starks to a tag team match next week, the La Sex Gods versus Andretti and Starks. But Daniel Garcia interrupted, and because he's kind of being mentored by Sammy Guevara, said, "Hey, I want to be in that tag match with you, Chris." And Sammy's like, "Well, you have a match on Rampage against Action Andretti. You win that match, you can have my spot." And then he also gifted him a pair of leather pants for new ring gear. So it looks like we're going to be seeing a different Daniel Garcia in the ring here this Friday on Rampage.
Yeah, there was, you were talking about Ricky Starks and the hat. He actually did steal the hat for a while early in the match.
But he didn't take it with him at the end. That's
what I assume that's what you were getting at, and I do think that would have added. But you know, I thought this was an all right match, above average, but some ugly stuff, like when Starks tried to slide under the turnbuckle and hop around it right before the commercial break, but it didn't really go great. That kind of took away from the match a little bit for me. I went 2.75. You know, pretty good. I wouldn't go out of my way for it, but, you know, fun stuff.
Yeah.
Solid enough.
Look, yeah, Jericho Appreciation Society needs to go away. They need to break up, and they need to do something else interesting. I don't know what that could be. But this is kind of getting a little long for the tooth for me. Next up, one of the best television matches I've ever seen on Dynamite, American Dragon Bryan Danielson versus Bandido. Look, I understand that you can't always feature everybody, and I know maybe there's some other issues as far as how often they can have Bandido on Dynamite. And let's be honest, we know Tony Khan, if he doesn't have creative for you, he doesn't like to use you a lot, because then you lose overexposure, yada, yada, bing, bang. We've hashed all that out before, especially when talking about Miro. But we got to get Bandido on television more. He is tremendous, and you could kind of sense, I don't know who is the one who said it, but you could kind of feel Taz connect with Bandido, because he's kind of a shorter powerhouse.
Yeah.
Somebody gets credit for it. Whoever it is, go ahead and at me. You get credit for this. But I really like that. And some of the things Bandido can do, like, I'm sorry, that fall away suplex where he does the moonsault is one of the coolest spots.
Off the corner. Off the corner, too.
Yeah, just
because I've seen that standing, I think, but I'm not sure I've seen it off the corner.
Oh, I've seen it off the turnbuckle before. I think Bandido and Hangman Page are the only two
that I've done. Hangman Page does a fall away, though, doesn't he? If I recall correctly.
That's a great question. I think he does the moonsault and the fall away. I think he's done both of them, but okay. I can be corrected on that.
That's on me if I'm wrong, obviously. Yeah, I love this match. This was fantastic. The Bandito's stalling vertical suplex is always so cool. Like, just really awesome stuff, because he almost always, like, gets real close to putting the guy down and then pulls him right back up. He's not done with him. Yeah, this was a blast of a match. You got Yave Bryan Danielson, which is fantastic. It makes me I do want to see him in CMLL now. Great match. The closing sequence was awesome. I actually thought they were headed into the closing sequence like three separate times, which is not a complaint. It was really cool. I just like this match a lot. I went 4.5 stars on it. Just really great stuff.
No, 100%. I loved this match. More Bandido. I thought it was really interesting towards the beginning of the match. You got a lot of commentary. I believe it was either Taz or Tony Schiavone, and then they were asking Excalibur's opinion because of the mask and how having the mask, especially Bandido's mask, because it goes down and covers so much of his face, how it can be a hindrance to cardio, breathing. And I thought that was a really, really interesting tidbit, almost using it as a vehicle to explain why Bandido ended up losing the match. Now, they were talking about it within a few minutes, but I thought it was really interesting and just another little subtle point that really sets this company apart from everyone else.
Yeah, there's a, on commentary, I always think like there's a lot of thought put into things, especially by Excalibur. But yeah, I thought that was a nice touch where they talked about the pros and cons of wearing a mask, and just a great match.
Yeah, just more Bandido, please.
Yeah, please.
Yes. Backstage, you had Renee Paquette back with Prince Nana and Brian Cage. And then Cage has obviously got announced he was facing Danielson. And MJF approached him with a pad envelope and said the money was for Cage if he could break Danielson's arm. So it looks like Cage is going to do everything he can to break his arm because obviously he's going to get paid for it. But this one, we're gonna talk about this a little bit. Willow Nightingale versus Toni Storm, and Toni Storm goes out with Saraya. But we had a pre-tape.
Yeah, let's talk about this pre-tape because I got a ton of thoughts on this.
Yeah, the pre-tape really mixes well with the actual match. And it was, you had Saraya, Toni Storm, and Hikaru Shida. And they're talking, Saraya's mad at Shida for throwing in the kendo stick, and Toni Storm kind of defends her. And then she looks at Saraya, and they talk about like throwing shade on AEW originals and how they have no respect for the business and they don't understand what real work is. And you have Hikaru Shida, who, albeit she came from the Joshi world, so she's wrestled for a long time, but she's an AEW original. She was here since day one.
Yeah.
So they're throwing shade at her. And I heard somebody else kind of call this the beginning of the female NWO. I don't know if I can go that far, but you could definitely tell that this was a turn, and it's probably best to turn Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter full-blown babyface anyways, because they're just so incredibly over and popular, and literally nobody cares about Saraya other than get her out of this company. And I think this is a great route, but tell me your thoughts on it, because I don't know.
I got less NWO and more like Mean Girl veterans off this for Saraya and Toni Storm. I think this is a great move for Saraya because the babyface debut and push, you know, was kind of a flop initially. But I think that it feels like she fits in well into this role, and I think it'll work really well for her. And Toni Storm turning with her gives Toni like better stuff to do than what she'd end up with if she was not involved in this, and you know she can work as a heel pretty easily. It doesn't, you know, she's already hard hitting enough where it's not going to take much of a shift in the ring. Just a few more cheap shots and she's a heel, as we kind of saw after the match. I forgot who said this. I thought I saw someone expressing concern about Toni Storm and wishing that she could just be moved to a different feud rather than it feeling like either you have to be involved in the title picture or you have to turn. So you're still, you know, relevant. But frankly, I feel like this is the biggest thing going on in the women's division right now. And I think she's a good fit for what they're doing with it. And I think, you know, it works in several ways. It freshens up her character. Because she did get passed by Jamie Hayter in particular, in terms of crowd reaction. That kind of is why they ended the championship run when they did. But also, she frankly can help Saraya out. She can be the heavy lifter when it comes to ring work for Saraya, who is, in my estimation, like a C-plus level worker right now. Like, you know, average, a little above, really, but not any great shakes. So pairing her with Toni Storm, Toni can do a lot of the heavy lifting. I assume that they're not going to trot out Saraya every week for matches because they haven't so far. So if like she's on a proverbial minutes limit, then this would be a good way to keep, you know, her involved without her actually having to wrestle. So I like this. Sheeta's reaction when she realized they were shit talking the AEW originals in that pretty tape was I loved how over the top it was. I think you can do that a little bit without feeling too WWE-ish, and this worked for me. And then I liked the post-match where, I mean, frankly, Willow Nightingale had Toni Storm beat, or at least was their equal in the match. And Toni Storm cheated to win because she's now a jerk. Then they get a few cheap shots in on Willow, and Ruby Soho runs out for the save, continuing the, you know, from the last Rampage. And Willow Nightingale still, you know, comes off like a star. I thought this was a tremendously booked couple of segments. You get Sheeta. Frankly, I think she's supposed to be teasing that she's stuck in the middle. And to me, it's more like she is definitely going to turn babyface. You know, but she's just kind of appalled at what her friends are doing. But yeah, I like this, and I think it's a great new direction for a lot of people involved.
The one thing I'm not abundantly clear on is where Hikaru Shida is going to end up in all this, because it at first it felt like she was going to be the one turning heel, and now she's going to be a babyface. But at the end of the segment, she didn't align herself with Ruby Soho and Willow Nightingale. Well, that's not necessarily the end all be all. You can loop back and make that work. This segment, while it felt like it was going to be Hikaru Shida centric when she came out, she ended up not mattering at all at the end. And I found that element to be very interesting, but it could also just be me overthinking.
I disagree strongly with your take, with all love.
Wow, we're going to have some drama here, folks.
Yeah, going to fight. I just thought it was pretty clear that she was actually the centerpiece of the segment because of the way she was shot and the way she was featured, and she's supposed to be kind of torn in the middle by what's going on because she considered herself aligned with Toni Storm and Saraya. Now, you know, I know that it kind of goes back to a few weeks ago when Saraya almost sort of tried to start a big air quotes a women's revolution in AEW, not realizing that it already happened and was good to go. Boy, that promo was a misstep. that was bad direction for that promo. And that kind of screwed everything up for her going forward. But I thought that my take on it is Sheeta was trying to stay, you know, true to the people that seem cool with her. And then frankly, she's appalled by what they're doing. And, is going to reject their turn when they do it, when they turn heel properly.
Yeah. All right. Whatever.
I think at this point it'd be a little weird if she did turn heel because she, the last 2 weeks she is, well, last week you can debate, but this week she was definitely not cool with what Saraya and Toni were doing. Yeah. So for her, if like next week she fully aligns herself with them, it'd be just kind of a weird Russo-esque swerve, I think, compared to what had happened prior.
Yeah, I guess. But I just...
I can tell you have a big investment in this.
I'm still kind of... weary is the wrong word. Just like the whole Jay Briscoe thing has my brain in a fog. And last week I was recording with COVID.
That's
so
true.
I've just had a massive brain fog here for a while. But
what did you think of this match?
I thought it was fine. And as far as like what our standards have become for the women's division, I think fine is pretty dang good. Like I had a lot of 3.5s. So I gave it 3.5. Look, these women can work. Toni Storm just has one of the best looks in the history of professional wrestling. She's just
a total star.
Oh, total superstar charisma, superstar look, superstar physique. Like everything about her screams, this woman should be headlining. And then when she gets in the ring, she works really well. She has literally everything. And I thought she worked well with Willow, and we know Willow is not perfect. She has a lot of potential, but sometimes, you know, when you're developing potential, some of the green can come out. And I thought she was good here. I didn't think she was great. And I think over time, you're going to see Willow become one of the biggest stars in this division, assuming, you know, nothing happens out of the ordinary, just because we've talked about her having that Bailey NXT babyface energy. She's got a tremendous connection with the crowd. She has like her mannerisms are over the top, but they're not extreme to a point where, oh, this is just ridiculous. That's, you can just tell that that's her. And I really, really like that. The match was good, but there's better in there. And I think they know that. And I think that we're going to be able to see more. The Ruby and Willow partnership was solidified even more after starting off kind of odd because, oh, you have like this lost soul in Ruby Soho and Willow Nightingale, who's just bubbly duckies and bunnies all the time.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily make sense, but a lot of people had the friend in high school that like, oh, you had the jock and the art student. Like the friendship doesn't make sense in a vacuum, but it does. And I think that this is working. The whole Sheeta inclusion, while it may make canonical sense, I just think was really weird on how we got here. So I wish that would have been cleaner, but whatever. I'm being nitpicky at this point. And what we're not going to be able to get nitpicky about is the main event. Darby Allin defeating Kushida for the TNT title. And I thought this was great. Kushida just worked over Darby's arm and kept working it, working it, working it. Had the hoverboard locked in. And then Darby was able to get, I believe, he got the pin with the Last Supper. And Kushida was a little annoyed. At the end of the match, you had Kushida go up to Darby Allin for a handshake and holding up one. And I thought it was also really important that Kushida did not come out alone. He came out with Kevin Knight and the DKC, two young lions in the LA Dojo. I thought that was really important, especially as we talk about the New Japan Strong dissolving and potential inclusion with Ring of Honor.
Yeah. Another thing I really liked after... I'm sorry, I muted myself there because I'm a genius, big brains. I think Kushida could be a really good cocky heel. I think he's got those mannerisms. I think he could actually line up in that role better than just being the white meat baby face he's seemingly been for like the past decade, ignoring his NXT retirement. But I really liked a little thing after the match he did where after he had worked over, I think it was Darby's left arm, if I'm recalling this correctly, he went to raise Darby's hand after like kind of motioning that he wanted another shot, but he went to raise, he made a deal out of raising his injured arm and then being like, oh yeah, I hurt that. Let me grit your other one. So I kind of think there could be a little bit of an edge there that could be very cool for Kushida. But I like this match a lot. It was just worked really smartly. So many cool spots involving like Kushida's arm bars and Darby throwing himself around. Like there was like when Darby tried to basically do a Topikon Hero or a somersault plancha dive off the top rope to Kushida in the chair on the floor, and Kushida moved out of the way and grabbed an armbar as part of that. I thought that was absolutely ridiculous, but also an awesome spot. But just constantly working on the arm really smartly. The crowd, what did you think of the crowd's response to Kushida, both when he came out and through the match?
I think it was fine during the match, but you could, Kushida just got super stale, especially in this Time Splitters gimmick in Japan. Then when he came over here, obviously the NXT run, people were excited at first. It's like, oh, cool, Kushida's got new people to work with. He's going to work with bigger people, something he had wanted to do forever in New Japan. There's no way New Japan was going to make him a heavyweight just with how slight he is. I mean, Hiromu's not the biggest guy in the world, but he's beefy. And I think you could have him pass as a heavyweight. And I mean, they didn't make Will Ospreay a heavyweight until he got beefy. So like in that New Japan heavyweight division, that means something. The overall size doesn't matter. It's the look, the physique, and Kushida just doesn't have it. So initially it was like, oh, it's exciting. And then it just kind of went kablooey and nobody cared about it anymore because NXT stinks. And there's really no redeeming qualities about NXT. Except, hey, you can see Cora Jade with the skateboard. Hooray. But I think Kushida needs something. He needs a repackage. I really thought that he could be good with Bullet Club. I mean, yeah, it's a tired trope. Hey, let's just send the guy to Bullet Club because he needs to go heal. But maybe it would work. He needs something so desperately. And I think that's one of the reasons why crowds all over the world don't really care about Kushida. But once they see the worker's great. It's so much fun.
I thought this was something of a put up or shut up match for Kushida, just because, you know, he may have been the biggest victim of the shift to NXT 2.0. When that regime change happened, he was definitely not going to get featured. It was not, unfortunately, despite the fact that he's a fantastic worker. And then he came back to New Japan, but was like unable to really do anything at all, thanks to an extended fight with, what was it, hoof and mouth disease, I think it was.
Foot and mouth, which is it's a very common illness in children.
Yeah. Somehow Kushida got it and just seemed like he couldn't shake it for, in my mind, it felt like months, even though I doubt it was actually that long. And then the Super Junior tournament came along, and like he and Kevin Knight were just not anywhere near the top of that tournament. So we got, you know, just kind of middle of the card, middling matches out of him for a while. And this was like his first real opportunity to show that he could do something outside of WWE. And I thought he did really well. If it wasn't a home run, it was a triple. I thought he just worked fantastically. I do hope we get him as a heel, whether it be in New Japan or under the AEW umbrella. But wherever it is, I think that he's ready for that position and could do really well with it.
Yeah, I agree. Overall, I thought this was this is going to sound weird, but I thought this was a bad Dynamite, but a very good wrestling show.
Okay.
Well, we just have such a high bar for some of these Dynamites and how they've been so great. And I think comparatively, what we've seen over the past 6 months, this is going to be like one of the bottom five shows. It was good, but maybe some of it was the fact that the energy was just not there because of the death of Jay Briscoe. But I just thought compared to other Dynamites, this show is not very good in a general sense of television wrestling. This is a very good show. And I think we're spoiled beyond belief with how great Dynamite has been.
I think comparing this show to last week's just is really unfair to it, just because last week's was one of the big, not quite pay-per-view, but pseudo pay-per-view, like cycle-ending shows, and there was no way it was going to match that. I thought this was a really solid show, like a 7 out of 10. It's not going to go down as one of the best ever or anything, but I thought it was perfectly solid. Some of the matches I would have liked to have seen be a little better, but I mean, when you have three, you know, to use the Joe Lanza, Rich Kreich terminology, three notebook matches, four plus star matches. I mean, I don't know. I can't be down on the show. So,
yeah, like I don't necessarily think it was a bad show. I just thought that there was more. Mm-hmm. Like it could have been better.
Sure. Yeah, but I think it was about like 85% what it could have been. Like Top Flight and Young Bucks, probably if they, you know, weren't upset by the news, the Young Bucks could have had a better performance. You know, you could break down stuff like that. But if Adam Page didn't turn into an occasional marble mouth at the end of segments when he's doing his all shucks baby face stuff, that segment would have been a little better. If Jake Hager was replaced by practically any member of the JES, that match would have been higher quality, except for maybe Daddy Magic. I'm worried about Daddy Magic's shoulder. I kind of worry he might be like, you know, a step behind where he was earlier in his career in the ring. But yeah, those are my takes. Solid show.
Yeah, really good show. And couple news clips. Fred, is it more impressive that Tony Khan has the money to be able to buy tickets for every single one of his shows, or that he's able to beat the Ticketmaster bots to even get a ticket to his shows?
I would say both. Obviously, the guy's got a... I can't believe he... Now, I assume you're referring to something from Meltzer's show. Is that with regards to the buying the tickets?
Oh, it absolutely is. Dave on Observer Radio noted there's still people in WWE that think and believe Tony Khan buys all the tickets to his shows and distributes them. They were saying it's, quote, easy to run a business if you don't have to make money, end quote. I'm sorry. Come on, guys. Come on. Yeah. WWE doesn't have to make money because they're getting it hand over fist. Like the ticket buying gimmick. Look, the only company, like major company, that's ever really like giving out that many free tickets to their shows was TNA. And that was at the very beginning. And they kind of, well, it's TNA. That's,
well, they had to move from Nashville. Yeah. They had to move from Nashville. And also they killed the indie that tried to, I think it was Burt Prentice's indie that tried to take over for them once they moved to Orlando. Cause everyone was so used to being handed free tickets to go to the fairgrounds every other Wednesday or every Wednesday night that when a company was like, "Hey, please give us money so we can show you wrestling," they're like, "Nah, man, we want free tickets."
Yeah, it's honestly shocking that people in WWE, and I don't know what people, but
yeah, that's a good question.
My guess is by the tone of it's not like stagehands. It's going to be people in the offices that believe this, and I think, to me, that's incredibly laughable because we know, like, they have a pretty good deal considering where they're at as a wrestling company, and they're going to cash in. Like, if I had to project out what they're going to make, I would project that they're probably going to get $100 million a year television deal for the combination of Dynamite and Rampage. Because hell, SmackDown from Fox is getting $200 million and Raw is getting $50 million. They're doing 5 hours of content for $250 million a year, plus $200 million a year for the premium live events in the library from Peacock. So WWE is making $450 million a year. I think AEW should easily be able to get 100 considering how consistent their ratings have been for their flagship show, Dynamite.
Would and will are different things. There's been a lot of talk recently, and it feels like this talk has been happening for decades now, about how the sports rights bubble is going to burst. And
yeah, it's not.
I mean, you know, it's going to be one of those things that it won't until it does, assuming it ever does at this point. I just feel like there's too much pressure on not just the traditional networks, but also now the streaming services to get involved in live sports to try to avoid churn / keep people watching. The thing with AEW, I think, is there's two things that I'm a little concerned about in terms of them getting big money on their contract, a major raise. One is that they are the secondary promotion. I feel like they're definitely back away from WWE where they were at the peak of CM Punk's era. So that could affect things. And also, LIV Golf just signed a deal with the CW, where they are not even going to get like paid by the CW. They're just going to get, I am now blanking out on the exact details, but I think it's an ad share deal, if I recall correctly.
It is an ad share deal, but I also think that one of the reasons why they had to go to the CW is because PGA, obviously has been a tremendous partner with networks for years and years and years. And LIV Golf is owned by the Saudis, and not a lot of people want to get into business with the Saudis for many, many reasons that you've heard hashed out over and over on wrestling podcasts. Yeah. So even though they have star power, it's also a different brand of golf. It's not four rounds, and after two rounds, you have the cut, and then you have the final two rounds with everybody who made the cut. It's three rounds, and everybody plays, and it's just a different style, and not a lot of people have been open to it.
The similarity there, though, is that they are the secondary brand of their sport, somewhat like AEW is in wrestling. I would say AEW is doing much better than LIV Golf is in terms of the television business. But, you know, it's still a little concerning, I think, if you look at that. The other thing to be concerned with is Warner Media just being so cheap over the past few months. You know, like, just constantly, like, they just shuffled Westworld off their service. They've decided not to release the last season of Snowpiercer, instead trying to sell that off somewhere. They're selling off their music library. I just think that there's a lot of reason to be concerned about their financial situation. And as a follow-up, there's the secondary concern is how would that, what is AEW's plan, I should say, regarding these negotiations? Do they want to stay with Warner to the point that they are willing to take a lesser offer from them, or that they're less willing to push negotiations away from that umbrella? another concern would be, will they get much interest from outside groups? Statistically, they probably should. But again, they're the number two promotion. That could impact things. So, you know, I don't think that it's going to be like poverty for them or anything. But I do think there's a bit of concern that maybe they won't get as much money as they arguably deserve. And that's a possible outcome for this.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see like when those TV deals officially come up, what they will be. But unless you have any other news, Fred, that's going to be our show for today.
Well, I do want to go over what's coming up next because we are going to record next week. We are now doing Thursdays as our regular show day. I'm saying this more to remind myself than so much the crowd. But this coming Rampage tomorrow, assuming it comes out today, they're going to have an Eddie Kingston interview about how spoopy House of Black is and how angry he is, I assume. You're also going to have Brian Cage versus Willie Mack, which could be fun. Jade Cargill and Leila Gray in tag action, which will probably not be much. Ethan Page against Jack Perry and Action Andretti versus Daniel Garcia. And then next week on Dynamite, because they are going to an obvious smaller city market, Lexington, Kentucky, which I get to see. They have only announced Brian Cage for, Brian Cage versus Brian Danielson in a Brian off. If this was a bigger market, they would definitely have had more stuff announced. I'm a little afraid of what we may or may not get. I mean, I don't think it'll be a complete disaster or anything, but I don't think we're going to back into even a show, a card as strong as what Fresno got this week. But hey, we'll see. I do think we may get to Takeshita in action, which. Hell yeah.
Listen, Fresno State Bulldogs better than the Kentucky Wildcats. I'll take Jake Haner over Will Levis all day. I'm sorry.
Wow.
I'm slandering Kentucky, even though they beat my Florida Gators and made me sad this year. Also a production note, in 2 weeks, the beginning of February, the show may be delayed or we may have to take a week off. I will be in Mobile covering the Senior Bowl. So if you love NFL draft content, make sure you continue to follow me and the Vikings Wire. We're going to have tons and tons and tons of it. But just so when you're looking at that podcast feed, wondering, hey, what's going on? Well, I will be networking the entire time Dynamite is going on. And then Thursday, when our normal record day is, I will be watching live practice. So the show may be delayed, just a forewarning for you there. But we will make sure we at least try and get something out to you. You can follow the show at Good Bad Hungy. Please make sure, especially if you're listening on the Voice of Wrestling feed, we greatly appreciate you listening. If you like the show, make sure you follow our own solo feed, the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy, to help spread the word and make sure other wrestling fans know how much this show is, that you enjoy the show. And then it will obviously help us in the charts. You can follow me on Twitter at The Real Forno. You can follow all my NFL draft work at The Vikings Wire. You can follow Fred on Twitter at Flagrant Wrestling. And that is wrestling with an R like Ted Turner, not Vince McMahon Sports Entertainment. And you can also catch Fred's Patreon in the show notes. And we will also have a link to the specific list that Fred talked about, categorizing some of the best in-ring matches and promo work of Jay Briscoe's career as kind of a retrospect. So you can fish that out, and all of it will be available on sites like YouTube, and you won't have to go to fishy torrents like we had to do back 10 years ago to get any kind of wrestling. Thank you very much for tuning in. Give us a 5-star review and we will see you next week.
Take care.
Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.